You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Well, hello, everyone. You're again joining Leadership Powered by Common Sense, and I'm your host, Doug Thorpe. Today, we're going to hear another story from a successful entrepreneur, a bit of a serial entrepreneur, actually. And his name is Jonathan Milligan. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Doug, thanks for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to our discussion. When Jonathan and I were chatting in our kind of ramp up prep work, we realized we had traveled in some of the same circles in terms of following some gurus that helped us understand this landscape of being an online content creator, blogger, podcaster, et cetera. And we've enjoyed sharing those experiences together. But let me start out, Jonathan. Let's just do a quick recap of exactly where you are right now and what it is your business is about, and then we're going to kind of solve backwards for the journey and the experiences you've had leading up to this.
Yeah, so we primarily work with messengers. So we consider messengers speakers, writers, coaches, course creators, and we help them tackle a big problem. And that is, how do I rise above the noise that's out there online? Because there's a lot of information, and build a tribe. And also, how do I actually create income from this? So I want to serve others, but I also want this to be a business. And so that's what we primarily help people do. One of the primary drivers is we want to help them get their first 1,000 customers, because we think if they can get 1,000 customers on a list, that can easily translate into a 6, even 7-figure business and beyond. So that's what we're helping people with.
Nice. And how long have you been doing that for folks?
Well, I started this particular business in 2011, and it came out of starting as a blogger for a career coach for accounting professionals. My way back story is as a high school teacher, then went on a journey to figure out what kind of business did I want to start, fell into a startup executive search firm, spent about 7 years understanding the world of, you know, the corporate world of finding good talent, hiring good talent. And then I said, you know what, I'm going to leverage the knowledge I have, and started a blog, and then figured things out along the way to create multiple income streams from that. And then that's what launched me into, people were asking, well, how did you do that? I want to learn how to do that. And that's where, you know, today our Market Your Message community is all about helping people capitalize on their experience that a lot of people don't realize they can turn that into impact and income.
You know, I think standing up in that space, trying to genuinely become a bit of an authority in a particular area and create that message. I love your company title there, Market Your Message. I think that's says a lot in and of itself. But it is hard, because there's the whole basic question of differentiating, you know, why you versus the 10,000 other people that pop up on LinkedIn seemingly to do the same thing. Let's maybe start at that point. How do you help people understand what they've got to do to really stand up and create that differentiator?
Yeah, I believe a big thing, especially for us messengers, writers, speakers, teachers, consultants, there is a lot of people doing the thing that you want to do. And in a way, that might be discouraging, but the truth is, it's also proof of concept that if other people are doing this, you can do this too. And so one of the things that I think helps differentiate that we don't put enough stock in is your uniqueness. My style is a very laid back, practical, step-by-step teacher. Now, when I started that in 2011, especially back then, it was still the Wild West days of online marketing. I had a lot of friends of mine tell me, Jonathan, you can't compete with that. Like, there's people who are, I mean, they are smart, witty, they're fast. They are salespeople. You are just like a high school teacher. You are just like laid back. There's already so many other people talking about blogging. Don't do that, right? You know, there's Michael Hyatt's already out there talking about blogging back then. But what I had to come to realize, Doug, was that people were going to be attracted to my style, my method. There are people like in my space that follow Brendon Burchard, right? And you could say, well, Brendon's dominated that market of like messengers. But I've had a lot of clients come to me who like, they didn't necessarily connect with Brendon per se, because they were like, I need practical. I need step-by-step. He's very inspirational, vision-driven kind of guy, but I need practical. And so I started realizing over time that that was what people saw as the best way for me to show up. So long story short, one of the things we help people do is before you start designing your business or your practice, you got to look internally first. How do you show up best for others? And when you understand how you're naturally wired, that's what you need to do. You don't need to copy what other people are doing to be successful. You need to lean into your style more, because people are going to be attracted to your style, your method, the way that you look at things. And I think that's how you differentiate yourself from others.
I agree with you, and I like the way you describe that. As you know, speaking from my own experience, there was that moment of concern when I looked at what I knew to be my style. I too am pretty laid back. I'm pretty, you know, the cadence here, if you can't tell, and the speaking is a little bit slower than say a New York City kind of approach. But people do resonate with that. There are people that appreciate that. And like you, that's, you know, I go to the title of my own show here, Leadership Powered by Common Sense. Mm-hmm. People want to get rid of the clutter and the noise. They want to get back to basics. They want to find that simple step-by-step answer for doing what it is they need to do. And if they're kind of covered up in the weeds, you know, getting that kind of clarity with simple, here's your 1, 2, 3 to get there, that's, that in and of itself has value. So I had to get past the, that kind of soul searching about, you know, do I want to try to show up like Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, and I like Gary. I follow his stuff a lot, but that's not my style. You know, I'm not innocent for the occasional F-bomb, as my friends will tell you, but I don't really want to make that part of my show. I don't really want to bake that into the way I show up for the audience here. So it's, and again, it's just a choice in the way I want to share the message, because I don't want it to be about me. I want it to be about the audience.
Yes. And that's so key, that, you know, if this is about serving first, and especially when you're in this space that we're talking about today, writing, speaking, coaching, consulting, it's all about solving problems for people and delivering results for them. And that's where the focus and attention is. And the good news is you can be yourself in your own style, in your own way, and you could attract the people who are looking for your style.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's powerful. Well, as you've turned your passion and skill for communicating into a business, what are some of the basic challenges you ran into as you tried to sort of ramp that up and build a team and build your own enterprise? What were just some of the basic hurdles that you hit?
Yeah, so it's the same thing that, you know, a lot of people go through. When I first started, it was just me. It was just me. I was learning all of the things. I was learning how to do it all. And then I got to a place where I realized I was the biggest bottleneck from growing. Yeah. And I needed to get help. And, you know, it was costing me money. I had a good friend of mine who was a business mentor who had a bigger business than me. And he really pointed that out to me. He's like, okay, so tell me something you're doing in your business. Well, back then I was blogging a lot, still do, but I said, well, I put an image together for my blog post. He goes, okay, how long has that taken you? You know, maybe 15 minutes, sometimes 30. Okay, so how much is your hour worth? Like, I don't know. I said, back then I was like, $200. He's like, okay, so would you pay someone $100 to create the blog post image for you? I was like, no way. He said, "You already are." And that was a revelation to me of like, okay, if I'm going to grow this business, it's got to be beyond me. And that could be hard. That could be difficult because we often, you know, we have to trust other people. There's a lot of trust that goes on. You're wondering for, as a business owner, can I afford to hire people? But then I had to realize that you have to think differently. Yet, as an entrepreneur, especially, it's not a cost, it's an investment because you're only one person. And so if I work 40 hours in a week, I've only got 40 hours to serve my community. But if I've got 10 teammates and us together, we've got hundreds of hours in a week that we can serve people. Your capacity grows, and that's where you're making a big impact. And I know both you and I follow a lot of Michael Hyatt. And I remember back then, he made a statement that really kind of resonated with me. And I was like, okay, I get it. He said, if your dream doesn't require a team, your dream's not big enough. And that's when I realized, okay, I can't be a one-man band here. I've got to scale. And we can get into more of, you know, the process of like how I failed and what I ultimately figured out how to scale beyond myself. But that was the first part, was really a mindset shift for me.
I think that's so very important. And I think that's true for anyone that chooses to dive into the entrepreneurial game. It's one thing to have your winning idea that you want to take to market, but it's a whole different game to be able to put together a plan and a process around all that and turn it into a viable, scalable, repeatable enterprise. And you're right, there are only so many hours in the day. And when those are burned up with non-productive things, you're consciously or subconsciously making the trade-off and impacting your ultimate success.
Yes, you are. And so that was a realization for me. Like, I'm the biggest bottleneck. And I had to come to that realization because it's like you begin to think, well, I just need to hire a second version of me. That was my first thought. Like, why can't I just, if I could just duplicate myself, we get so much more done. And that was the wrong thinking as well. So you really, it begins with understanding that you're the bottleneck. You're not great at everything. Let's get help. Let's find people who can do things that you're not great at.
Yeah, that is so very true. Well, let's just touch on that in a little more of the details. In your case, as you chose to expand and do that, were you doing it all virtually with people, or did you kind of lock in locally and want to be able to see people face to face? How did you decide on that?
Yeah, so I've primarily done virtual, and part of that reason is it was a choice, as a lifestyle choice of wanting to work from home, or if I wanted to travel, I can travel. If I, you know, wanted to be on vacation, I could work from anywhere, kind of thing. So virtual was what I wanted to do, but it presents its own challenges too. Now, some of my employees are local, but all of us work from home. But it started with me figuring out and identifying. Well, first of all, I did it the wrong way. I tried to hire a virtual assistant and then just dump a bunch of stuff on her. And then she kept coming back to me. And I'm like, I've already explained this. Why is she not getting it? And then I realized that she wasn't the problem. I was the problem. So after that kind of failed, I kind of went back and said, okay, what do I need to do? And that's when I realized I need to document my processes and procedures first. And so I kind of use a three-step process now that works really well for us. It's a document, delegate, and then detach. Now, detach isn't where you're never checking in. You've got to be a good manager, leader, developer, people, but it's, you're not micromanaging. Like, you want them ultimately to own that role, that position. And so when I started just documenting what I was doing, and one of my favorites is just using like Loom, where I'm just recording either a video of myself speaking or screen sharing and showing the thing that I'm doing, right? So if we use podcasting as an example, you know, back in the day, I was editing my podcast. Well, gosh, my audience isn't expecting me to edit the podcast. Somebody else can do that. So I started creating videos showing how I was editing the podcast. And then now I could outsource that. And so that was kind of the process to get there. Once I got to about five or six people who were doing specific things for me, like I'd hired a customer service person, hired someone to do all the graphic design. And these were all contractors in the beginning. Then I realized now I'm at that place where I need someone to manage the people so that I can still be doing the things that I want to do, right? The networking, the vision, the creating of content so that I'm not kind of bogged down in the management piece. And in the online world, there's this thing called OBM, which stands for Online Business Manager. And so I went on a hunt, used my old school recruiting on LinkedIn and found a certified OBM who became a partner with me, not so much a virtual assistant, but more of a partner in that she manages the team. So then I can be the visionary. She's the integrator. If you've ever read Rocket Fuel, it talks about that concept. And man, that was a game changer for me. Once I got an integrator that could handle the details, I could just do the visionary creative stuff that I enjoy.
That's very interesting. And that sounds like along the line of Gino Wickham's Traction and EOS system, that same idea. Somebody playing the role of the visionary creator, and that's usually the founder, often the founder, but then you still need those that can actually do the execution day by day. So that's a good good division of those responsibilities. And did you get any help figuring that out, or did you just kind of come to that on your own?
Well, I read Traction, and then that led me to the Rocket Fuel book. The Rocket Fuel book is really all about the visionary and integrator. And there was even a test or assessment that you could take to figure out which one you are. And I was like 76%, 70-80% on the visionary. And that's when I knew at that moment, I need an integrator. And so that's when I just started going on a hunt. This was a few years ago. And then I was like, is this going to work? You know, but we settled on a 90-day plan. Let's do this for 90 days. And you get in, manage the people, improve the processes, handle that side of things. In 90 days, we can decide, is there still a need for this role? Or do we both still like working together? And the answer was yes. And now my integrator has been with me 5 years, maybe.
Wow.
And she knows more about the business. In some way, she's become my boss, because she keeps me on track. You know, one of the things as a visionary we can do, especially when you get a team, is we can have a tendency to get excited about new ideas. And then from their end, we're always changing things.
Yeah.
And we're just, we're disrupting things. And that's why a lot of founders, if they're not careful, can be a disruptor, keeping things from being efficient. And we've seen examples of that, you know, on bigger companies back in the day when Jobs originally got fired, right? It's like there's just plenty of examples of that you have to be careful of. And so an integrator can also keep me as the visionary on track, because she's helping me implement the vision that I have.
Yeah. Well, very wise choice there, and really really interesting to hear that part of the story. And it's hard to believe, but we're already up on a break point here, Jonathan. And so we are going to take that break, but we're going to hang on to that thought about that integrator role, and we're going to pick that back up right after this message.
Business is all about solving complex problems as fast as you can create them. Become the best problem solver by leading others to greatness too. And the first step is going to DougThorpe.com. Doug Thorpe is known globally for coaching entrepreneurs and business leaders, improving their performance and the work output of everyone surrounding them. You can find health, wealth, and happiness by learning to lead others to health, wealth, and happiness. Go to DougThorpe.com now and order Doug's books or hire him to coach your managers. That's Doug, T-H-O-R-P-E.com.
All right, everyone, we're back, and this is another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense, and I am visiting with Jonathan Milligan, who is an entrepreneur and the leader of a brand that he calls Market Your Message. We've been talking about kind of his journey growing that business. And when we took the break, Jonathan, we were talking about the decisions you made to kind of get beyond yourself and allow some other talent to join the team and mix in there. And one of the things you talked about is making your own self-assessment of your distinction between being the visionary creator guy or the implementer, or the, some call it executor of the work. What came to my mind as you were describing that was back in my banking days, I had a lot of client companies that I watched the founder fail to make those distinctions and make those choices about growing the business. And ultimately, the success they were having caused a breakdown because the owner never kind of got out of their own way and allowed those changes to happen. So talk to us a little bit more about your learning and thought process to kind of open up and allow those things to happen.
So what I've realized is, you know, I went again from one person, just me, to having a team of people. We're somewhere around 15, 17 people now. Some are contractors, but you know, that's requires a whole new level of thinking and skills with a team like that. And I had a mentor who mentors are so important. I had a mentor who told me the saying, each level, new devil. And what he meant by that is each level of your business growth presents a new challenge. Hmm. It's like the book, What Got You Here? It's Not Going to Get You There. And what we have to realize, especially as founders, is that we can't just continue to do the same thing. Like if we're not growing, we're providing a cap on the potential of the business. And so like essentially as your business grows, you're tackling newer, bigger problems. And so for me in the last 2 years, it's become evident that I've got to really grow. And I've been investing and coaching and working hard in my leadership, developing people, helping them understand the vision, helping them, you know, be patient with them, making room for them to make mistakes, and attacking the process and not the person. And just all of that, whereas it's easy for a founder to say, well, I can just do it myself, right? And so we're either rescuing people and just pulling it back and doing it ourselves, or we're aggravated and frustrated at people and we're creating tension in the culture. And so for me, it's been, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I wasn't thinking about leadership development. Now it's like my primary thing I'm thinking about every day is how can I lead well and develop people?
Well, again, that's a very insightful observation, and kudos to you for figuring that out. However you did it, either through the help of your mentors or guides or just your own journey. But I think you describe a phenomenon that's also there. I call it the invisible wall. An entrepreneur can start a business with a great idea, grow it to a certain level, but pretty soon this invisible wall is going to present itself. And the wall is the difference between being able to lead the company or just simply manage the service or the product you're doing. And there is a significant difference between leading and managing. And as you grow a business, it's that coming awareness of being the need to be a leader for what you're doing, as opposed to simply just continuing to manage the process and the people. And with my clients, I spend a lot of time talking about the significant differences between management and leadership. And again, kudos to you for finding that revelation, because it I'm confident it'll serve you in the long run, and you continue that work. And what I tell people who have entered into a true leadership development journey, it is a lifelong endeavor. It's not a destination you somehow arrive at one day. I'm a big fan of John Maxwell's work, and that's one of his principles in his 21 Irrefutable Laws. He calls it lifting the lid. you're always going to realize there's a certain cap of your ability or experience that is going to hinder your growth and the continued progress of your organization. But you've got to work to lift that lid and get to the next level and figure that out. Maybe it comes in the form of teaching and reading, or maybe it comes from finding yet another coach or mentor to work with you to take you to that next level.
That's a great point. You know, I was just having a conversation with my 17-year-old who I'm just, you know, always trying to be a good dad and develop him. And I was telling him, I was saying, do you realize growth only happens outside of your comfort zone? I know it may sound really simple, but we often want growth in our comfort zone. We just want to stay where we are. We don't want to be uncomfortable. We don't want to be trying something risky or something we're not great at, or we just want to stay in this comfort zone and we want growth too. It doesn't happen that way. Growth always happens outside the comfort zone. And that's just the way it is. And I think that principle is true whether you're 17 or you're 65 or you're 33, it doesn't matter. If you want to see growth, it's outside of that comfort zone. You have to be willing to step out.
I think that raises a good point, and I totally agree with you. Growth always is outside the comfort zone, but there's an interesting dynamic I think people present when you start talking about that. First thing, they obviously express some kind of fear or doubt about their own ability or willingness to go out to that edge. But I like the model that says, well, you don't leave your core. You don't really leave your comfort zone. We're not talking about that. It's not like you're flying to Mars or something. Mm-hmm. But you need to consciously and willingly agree to go to the edge for some period of time and then allow yourself to come back to the core, come back to that center. And then the real skill in being a leader is the agility of moving back and forth between the core and the edge. So
yeah, that's a great point.
That's the ultimate perfection of really becoming a leader. You're not afraid of the edge because you know you can come back, but you willingly go to the edge on a regular basis to try to create that growth, create that expansion or stretch, if you will. Thinking of it in terms of going to the gym and working out, what you're really doing is stretching everything and stressing everything mm-hmm. to cause that growth. Same thing happens with your own leadership abilities.
100%. You know, as a leader, we're the ones who need to tell the team, point at the horizon and say, that's where we're going. Yes, I don't have all the answers. And yes, I need your help. But here's where we're going. And not only here's where we're going, this is why we're going there. And if they can get and understand the why, the how may change, right? The strategy is flexible, but the destination and the why is what we're going, where we're headed. And you know, that requires, you're right, back and forth, pulsing back from getting out of your comfort zone, but also staying true to your own strengths and who you are and leaning into those as well.
I'm going to shift gears a minute, Jonathan, maybe put you on the spot, but for the little bit of time left, I think it'd be valuable to get into this. There's a lot of discussion these days about the whole idea of leaders and their teams working on the issue of trust. So first question to really put you in the hot box here, how do you think the trust is with your team?
I think the trust is really, really high. I think there are times where I have felt like I've been on both extremes. I think there's times where I have felt like when I got to the root of it, it's like, I'm not really trusting that person like I need to. Other times I've had such high trust and then been disappointed because, you know, big errors were made that shouldn't have happened. And I was trusting that person to own it. And so we had to work through those difficult conversations of, you know, if it's a repeated process, then obviously there's a situation where maybe this person's not right for the team. But I haven't had that, fortunately. It's often been, you know, this happened, let's figure out, let's attack the process. Why, what fell apart? So you're always never going to get it perfect. At least I don't feel like I do. I think you're always asking yourself, am I micromanaging or am I laissez-faire where it's total hands off? Like I'm not even aware of what's going on. And you're going to be swinging that pendulum constantly. But I tend to not micromanage. I tend to be high trust. But in that, I've got to also be willing to inspect, because oftentimes when I do inspect, I find things that aren't going the way that I want them to go. And there's an opportunity for correction, development in a loving way. So that's what I would say is the pendulum's always swinging and I'm always trying to strike a balance with that.
It is interesting, and it is a conundrum as a leader to sort of build that trust environment. And as Ronald Reagan famously said, you want to trust but verify. So you still need to assert your ability to hold people accountable, even though you are demonstrating the trust in them to go do the work and take the assignment and work it through. But if you do verify something and you're looking at the accountability side of the equation, you discover it's less than or wrong, you have to have those discussions in a way that doesn't just totally disrupt the trust and eliminate it, but rather somehow adds to it. Because part of the trust equation says that if I'm the employee, I'm going to ask the question, is my performance going to be evaluated fairly and equitably? And if the boss can show me that, if I'm reasonably situated on the emotional intelligence scale, I can accept the feedback I get that's less than, that I somehow missed a mark. I need to be able to show up with the willingness to take that coaching if it's necessary. So it is an interesting dynamic. And I do know there's a lot of discussions going on in the business world today about the effects of the pandemic and how that's changed people's mindsets toward work. And people are, as work, large teams are coming back to offices, people are discovering that people are showing up with chips on their shoulder that they didn't have before. And so as a leader, it's a tricky minefield to work through.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because in a lot of these cases, they were working kind of almost autonomously from home. And now they're working in an environment where they can be checked up on a little bit easier. And so I can see that dynamic of like, how do you do that? At the same time, you want to trust your employees as well.
Yeah. And if that boss pre-pandemic had a tendency toward micromanaging or close scrutiny, the employee might not be willing to be subjected to that anymore.
So that's a great point.
It is creating some new kinds of tension in the workplace. Well, Jonathan, as we kind of get close to the end here, tell people how they can best get a hold of you if they're interested in learning more about the programs and services you guys offer.
Absolutely. So we just recently published a book called Your Message Matters, How to Rise Above the Noise and Get Paid for What You Know. And it really is a culmination of 11 years doing this and also teaching others. How do you package up your experience into a message, into a business, and then how do you market it in a way using today's media to build that audience? And then what are some ways you can actually get paid doing it? And so that book is, of course, available in bookstores, but we've actually set up a website where you can get a free copy. You just have to pay for shipping. And that's at yourmessagemattersbook.com. And at the same time, the main website where we're adding value and recording our own podcast and YouTube videos, things like that, is at marketyourmessage.com.
Great. Well, folks, we'll have all that in the show notes here. And by the way, if you're listening on a podcast download channel of some sort. Don't forget, we've got this in video form over on the YouTube channel at Leadership Powered by Common Sense on YouTube. So you can replay with a video version if you'd like to, and see these couple of handsome guys that are talking to you right now. So for what that's worth. Jonathan, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I think the theme today, and this is a great conversation, I appreciate you having it. I think the theme that we talked about today is really kind of hinged upon this idea of constant, never-ending growth. As a leader, you're going to have to continue to grow. And just like the dynamics have changed with people going, working from home, coming back, it just requires us as leaders to be lifting that lid, like you were talking about earlier. And we have to be willing to grow and tackle new challenges. And so that's what it requires to be a leader. That's our responsibility.
Very well said. I do agree with you totally. I think that constant journey of seeking out leadership development is something so important for the future of your own business, as well as the team you may have responsibility for. So I think that brings it to an end, Jonathan. Let me say thank you one more time for being on the show. I think this has been great.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Doug.
You bet. You bet. So everyone, we're going to bring it to a close, and thank you for listening in. I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we look forward to seeing you again sometime soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com.